It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Kate Archer Kent. As a young boy, Paul Lohr had to flee Laos with his family after his father was assassinated in the violent aftermath of the Vietnam War.
On their perilous journey to Thailand, Paul's mother and sister drowned in the Mekong River, leaving Paul and his other siblings as orphans.
After 2 years in refugee camps, Paul and his family came to the U.S. to start a new life. He and three of his brothers landed in Green Bay.
This story is detailed in Paul Lohr's first memoir, Modern Jungles. Now he's out with a follow-up that picks up his story as a teenager navigating life as a Hmong refugee in Green Bay and growing into an adult with kids of his own.
Paul Lohr is Associate Dean of the School of Education at UW-La Crosse. His new book is called Bamboo Sun, A Hmong Refugee's Search for Identity and the American Dream. Paul, thanks for joining us.
Yes, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
The title of your new memoir, Bamboo Sun, it has a double meaning. What is the significance of bamboo in Hmong culture and to you personally?
Yes, when we were thinking about coming up with a title that would capture the story, we went through a few titles. And this particular title ended up being the one that we went with. And more than anything else, it's both the bamboo as a plant and the significance of the bamboo and the Hmong culture. In addition to that, bamboo also has a different meaning in Hmong, which is orphan. So we decided that given the nature of the story that we were going to write about, we felt that Bamboo Sun would be an excellent title for this particular book. So when I say we, I'm referring to the Wisconsin Historical Society Press and myself.
You wrote about your early childhood in your first memoir, Modern Jungles. What do you remember most about that journey that you and your siblings took to arrive here in Wisconsin?
You know, that's also a question that I've been asking myself for a very long time. You know, growing up, I've always wondered why these particular memories stay with me. You know, they would play over and over in my head. And so it took a very long time to find a medium in which I felt comfortable to share those memories. But they were always playing in my head.
I think that it was interesting when you write about how you felt like a blank canvas as an orphan without parents. What was that like, that slate, if you will, of who you were starting with as Paul Lohr?
I think when we look at that particular question, obviously when you look at people's life, when each of us becomes an orphan, is a pivotal moment as to how we understand life. For example, for my siblings, their experiences are quite different than mine. In my case, I think being 5 years old at the time, where you have just enough memories of your parents, but then not enough. Mm-hmm. And even when we were living in some of the tribal villages in Laos, I did not get to see my parents that often. Mm. So when both passed away, as I was talking about that or trying to capture that particular moment and came up with that description, it almost feels as though, because you don't have that connection to your origin or your parents sharing with you, or that you did not have enough time to really connect with your parents. Mm-hmm. I think I said something to the effect that you feel like you're just blossomed out of thin air, and then you go on this journey. For most part, at least for me anyway, you have to be very independent.
Mm-hmm. You found refuge in soccer. You know, you were this talented midfielder, and then you coached. Why do you think you felt so at home as a soccer player?
Yes, I'm also trying to figure that out. You know, soccer happened to be an activity that for whatever reason, I became very good at it. Mm-hmm. I did not grow up similar to, let's say, some of my teammates who probably started playing when they were 4 or 5, and so they were pretty familiar with it. I did not play organized soccer until I was 13. And so it was a very instantaneous experience, and I just mm-hmm. got into it and somehow excelled at it very quickly. And then I just found joy in it because it's an activity that is completely different than some of the more personal experiences that I was going through.
Hmm. You graduate early and in the top 10% of your high school class, but throughout the book, you talk about how you felt like you weren't as smart as the other students. What was the turning point for you in finding confidence and finding your footing?
Yes, I think that particular question really strike at the core of my identity. I don't know whether it's just personal anxiety that I have. I recently had a conversation with a reader who brought up that particular theme throughout the book. And so what I shared with the reader was that now that I have some time to think about it, I found that it's actually a positive thing for me to have this sense of inferiority to my peers, that by having that almost anxiety, it helps me to stay more focused on the activities that I was going to do or the tasks and responsibilities that were ahead of me. I think in many ways, for me, that was a positive trait to have, not to be overly confident, not to be overly arrogant about how I go about doing things.
We're talking with Paul Lohr, Associate Dean of the School of Education at UW-La Crosse, about his new memoir. It's called Bamboo Sun. I want to talk about Hmong rituals. And in Bamboo Sun, you write that compared to other Hmong kids, you didn't go to very many traditional ceremonies or rituals, but you did celebrate Hmong New Year in Green Bay, and you also traveled to St. Paul for big Hmong gatherings. What was it like for you going to these events?
For up to that particular point in my life, I had not been around, even when we were in Laos, because I was born into the war and we were hiding most of the time. So I had very minimal engagement with other Hmong individuals. And then even when we got to the refugee camps in Thailand, it was a time in which there was so much hopelessness that I did not find any connection with many of the Hmong people that I was a part of. So it wasn't until I went to that New Year in Minnesota back in the 80s that it was really the first time in which I was among many Hmong people. You know, practically probably around 95% of the people there were Hmong people. And I had never been around so many Hmong people in my life. But at the same time, because of the way that I grew up, you could say that unlike other Hmong children of my age, not having my parents around, I wasn't, to a great extent, being exposed to Hmong cultural ceremonies and rituals. But I was a part of it enough to have a sense of understanding as to why they're doing what they're doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But being at that New Year was a strange feeling. To know that you're Hmong, but you don't have... It was difficult to experience the nuance and the subtleties of the particular event.
It almost felt like you were sitting there in the bleachers looking out at the ceremony
as
an observer of someone looking into something. You know, one of my favorite parts of the book is you and Maya and the wedding rituals. And I'm just wondering, what stands out to you about that courtship?
You know, when you're growing up and you get married, you know, particularly if you're going through a very traditional Hmong marriage ceremony, at that age, you're just excited. You know, you're just mm-hmm. excited to go through it. And for me...
And you're young.
Yeah. For me, it was just my second time, my marriage was just my second time going through it. Mm-hmm. But in retrospect, it is a ceremony that has been refined over, you know, the decades and hundreds of years. And so underneath all of the festivity, the drinking, the rituals, the social gatherings, you know, people enjoying the event, embedded within all of that is an incredible emphasis on love, on cherishing your family, cherishing your new family, cherishing your community, that this is the next phase in your life. And so much of it is being passed on at that short amount of time. And it took me a while to understand why so much information, so much life lessons are being passed on in a 1 to 2 day ceremony. And that's because back in Laos, a wedding is one of the few opportunities in which life lessons could be shared. People were just so busy with farming and other activities to survive and to do well that the opportunities to learn are far and in between. And so wedding is one of such opportunity.
You traveled back to Laos and Thailand twice in your adult life, and you write about your Fulbright scholarship in 2004, and then again in 2022 with Maya. You had very different emotional experiences and responses each time. What was different about your most recent trip?
Yes. Growing up, that world that I was born into, and that world that I got a little taste of, growing up, that world seemed so far away, and I wasn't sure if I would ever get back. And then for a very long time as well, you know, up until 2020, that region of Laos where the U.S. had two secret CIA bases. So just to have that opportunity when Laos opened up that area to the outside world and to be able to go back and see for the first time many of the landmarks that I grew up hearing about, you know, the CIA headquarters in Long Kieng, Laos, you know, to see that in person. I saw a few photos of it in the past, but it is nothing compared to being there myself. And knowing that my family lived there, knowing that I was born not too far from there, and knowing that that's the center of what led the Hmong to eventually come to the U.S.
And you put flowers in the Mekong River to honor your parents, to honor your sister. That moment, too, must be extremely emotional.
Yeah, I was very fortunate to have that opportunity in 2004, even though we were on a Fulbright project. Particularly when we got in Laos, we were limited to what we could and could not do. And so I had a brief moment right before we were going to come back to Thailand. We were there for a week, and for the entire 1 week, we had very little opportunity to be away from the group or not to have any of the Laotian officials being within the proximity. So I was able to get up pretty early and took that moment to pay homage to the people who perished in the Mekong River.
You have two memoirs now detailing your life, really opening up your internal struggles, your joys through the decades. How is telling your story a gift to Hmong culture and identity and to future generations and clans?
Yes, I think that strike at the heart of the courage that was needed to write the two memoirs. Mm-hmm. I think on the surface level, you know, they're memoirs, and it's you could say it's a adventurous story, and it's a story about my journey. My hope is really that readers get to see beyond that, that the story, the two books mirror not just the Hmong American experience, but it's an American story. It's an immigration story, that it's really a story about all of us. And it's not just a story about my adventure or the experiences that I had.
Pao Lor, thank you so much for joining us and sharing Bamboo Sun.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for having me.
That is Pao Lor, Associate Dean of the School of Education at UW-La Crosse. We've been talking about his new memoir, Bamboo Sun, which looks back at his teenage years as a Hmong refugee in Green Bay and his journey into finding peace and identity in adulthood. He joined us from our La Crosse studio.